You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Dubin, OBCA President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by Ron Hopp, the Boys Basketball Coach at Dayton High School. Coach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic.
Awesome, Coach. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us for the podcast. I really appreciate it. For those coaches and listeners that maybe aren't familiar with you and your background, can you give us a little bit of info on kind of what got you into basketball and coaching basketball and how you ended up at Dayton?
Well, I played basketball here at Dayton back in the late 70s, early 80s, graduated in 81, and went to college, ended up playing at Treasure Valley and Idaho State, and came back home after college and worked on our family farm, and it was really not involved in any coaching at that point. Got married, had some kids, and kids started playing, and so did some youth stuff early, and then got asked by a varsity coach to come help, and Doug Miles, who was now at Marshfield, and I loved being the JV coach. You're never wrong as a JV coach. You got all kinds of information, but you're never wrong. So Doug his father passed away and went back home to Marshfield, and so I took over as the head coach in 2002 and was left with a really good team, so it got off to a good start.
And then the rest is history. You've been there ever since.
Well, it seems like yesterday, but we've had a lot of good kids here, so it's the time really flies when you're having fun, so to speak. So we've had really good teams, and it's been a lot of fun. We had a lot of good kids, and they've given a really good effort.
Yeah, can you talk about just a little bit, what is it like to coach at your own high school, your alma mater? I mean, you talked about didn't really get into coaching until your kids started doing it, maybe never thought that was going to happen. What does that mean to you, and what does that bring to your experience when you're coaching your kids?
Well, there's a lot of pride in this town. As far when I came here in 71 from California, I just fell in love with this town because athletics were, Friday night football games, and I walked down two blocks and lights were on, and you get to go watch varsity football, and then basketball season come around, you get to go to the games and just, walk another block and go to the, and see some really talented players. And at that time when I moved here, Dayton had been going to the state tournament, like a number of years in a row for basketball, and they'd had some really good teams. And as a young kid, you go to those games and go, I want to be like that guy. And then pretty soon you go, I want to be better than all those guys. And it was just kind of that feeling of small town involvement. And so, I try to explain that to these kids that come through our program. It's not, it's not about me and what I do. It's about what you do and the legacy that you leave. And usually that means if you put a good product on the floor, people are going to want to come and watch you.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask, too, you talked about one of the best parts about being a JV coach is you're never wrong. all this information. And then, you said Coach Miles left and you took over as the head coach, where it seems like a lot of people think you're always wrong. So what was that transition like for you, and what was kind of the, oh, wow, I'm no longer the JV coach moment for you?
Well, there were some real, there were some moments where you think you know everything, and you really don't until you're in that spot in the head seat, and it all comes down, crashing down at some moment. You're going, huh, maybe I don't know as much as I thought I did. But those are learning. And if you can get as a young coach, if you can get through those times of struggle, whether they're with your emotions or whether with X's and O's or whether just connecting with kids or officials, for that matter. I mean, you know, how do you treat officials? You know, I treat officials totally different than I did when I first entered the game as a head coach. I think that, you know, your ideology is that they're out there to get you all the time, and now it's they're part of our game. We need them, and we need to. They're not out there to get anybody. They're out there to make our game better and promote it. So, you know, they all change. It's an ebb and flow, but I think I've learned a lot over the years on just, you know, on those specific items is how to get the most out of your kids too.
Yeah. I want to talk briefly about last season, which was bizarre for many reasons, right? Not starting until May, many games in a week, less practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of curious, how did you adapt to that, and what did you do to differ what you would do in a typical season to match last year's restrictions?
Well, it was tough for everybody. You know, you only think about yourself in these situations, but it's tough for the teams that you're playing as well too. But you know, it seemed like we had more games than we had practices, and that is extremely difficult because we're, you know, defensive oriented, and our rotations are a little bit different than your normal rotations. And so you got young kids, you know, forced into action. We had a couple sophomores that were playing a lot of minutes, and you know, they needed practice time. It's frustration of, yeah, we're not very good tonight, you know, and it's nobody's fault. It's just that, you know, it's something that, you know, you can do it in practice, but, you know, putting it on the floor at game speed is a little bit different, and, you know, the emotions and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, those were the difficult things, the masks in the beginning, and then kind of some places you didn't wear masks and some places you did. Salem, we had to wear masks at all the facilities in Salem, but, you know, some of the other outlying areas we didn't. But, you know, those challenges were unique, and hopefully, you know, we'll see how that transpires this year. But the practice is, I think, for our young kids, it really, you know, they almost lost a year because we just threw them into the game, and it's like playing AAU. You don't really get as much out of it as you can if you're practicing and playing defense the whole time. So that was a struggle.
Yeah, I'm curious, is there anything that you guys did with your team that you think you might keep, you know, maybe a new, more concise way of doing something that you thought was real beneficial that you'll kind of try to implement as you move forward?
Well, the practice scheduling is sometimes, I mean, you know, how long you practice. I mean, I think that, you know, I remember when I first started, I would practice 2 hours and sometimes longer, you know, if we could, you know. But I just don't think that's beneficial to your kids. I think, you know, early practices for, you know, the allotted time, a couple hours. And then as the season goes on, breaking it down. And if you can't get it done in an hour and 15 minutes, I mean, you know, these guys, is a long season for some of them. And I think we've kind of implemented, you know, cutting our practice times down the later in the year it gets, because trying to save some legs and so forth. But and maybe just varying your practice schedule as much as possible. I tell my coaches that, my assistants all the time. I said, look, if this thing gets monotonous, you know, I mean, there's certain things that we do every day, defensive drills that we want to ingrain in them, but we need to mix it up and make it fun. Cause if the kids aren't having fun, they're not going to want to be here as much as if it's just a grind the whole entire time. So we try and incorporate some fun things into our practices. But those are things that we will probably keep from this year moving forward.
Yeah. You mentioned a little bit, you know, kind of when you started to where you are now, and I kind of wanted to ask you about that and how your coaching style and philosophy has changed, and if you could go back and give your first year head coach self some advice, what would that be?
I'd get better assistants. Not that they weren't good. Maybe I should rephrase that. Listen to my assistants more. But I just think, you know, not micromanage kids on every play. I mean, you know, they're kids, and we want them, you know, I think the biggest compliment I can ever receive from a fan or opposing coach is your kids play hard. That to me is everything, because if you can get them to do that, it's huge. But I believe that, you know, just patience. I mean, you know, I'm not the most patient person. As far as, you know, I want results sometimes, and sometimes those don't happen in a vacuum. They take a little bit of time to, especially with younger kids or just kids in general. I mean, some kids mature a little bit faster than others, but the patience with kids as far as, being firm, but not too firm. And the question it always comes back is, would I want to play for me? Would, you know, and as a coach, you have to, you have to seriously ask yourself that, would I want to play for me? And sometimes there's nights I come home and I go, I wouldn't want to play for me. I was a jerk. I mean, I wasn't good. I mean, I make mistakes just like the kids do. I substitute, you know, maybe poorly. I call timeouts when I should let them play on. And so, you know, but the whole understanding, hey, kids' emotions and stuff, you know, and trying to get the most out of them, I think that's the number one key that we need to keep in mind, is that they are kids and we need to get the most out of them. And if we put them on their heels all the time, or we put them, you know, a negative connotation with everything, we're not going to get the most out of them.
Yeah. Well said, Coach. Well said. What do you hope players will be able to know or do when they leave your program? So after 4 years in high school, maybe longer, if they're in your youth program, what are kind of the standards or expectations you have for your kids by the time they're done?
Well, I mean, the small answer would be, you know, to get on the floor for us, you got to defend. I mean, that's kind of the number one goal for us. It's like, you know, I can't teach kids offense. I mean, to be an offensive player, you can't teach a kid that. He's either put in the work and is gifted, you know, or done the footwork on his own, you know, at a season, or grown a bunch, and now he can shoot jumpers. I mean, but defense is the number one thing that we want them to come away with, because you can do that every night. You can give a great effort every night. And so we talk about attitude and effort. Look, attitude and effort. You're going to make mistakes tonight, but it's attitude and effort. And as long as you keep that in mind and you've given the best you can and you get outplayed, you know, we're still not happy about it, but at least we can hold our head high and say we did what we said we were going to do. We're going to give a good effort and have a great attitude in doing so. And the attitude part is probably the hardest one to, you know, for coaches and for players to keep in check, because everybody wants to win. I mean, it's easy to be a great winner. It's hard to be when you lose, it's hard to, you know, do it with dignity and respect and you know, have that maturity to go, you know, they outplayed us tonight. I don't like it, but so we want our kids to learn how to, you know, struggle through the offensive woes, but still continue to give your best effort, because that's going to carry on in life. I mean, it doesn't always go our way in life. So as long as you can give that good attitude and good effort, things will turn around.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're going to dive a little bit on defense in the second segment, but I want to talk about, you know, you're talking about defense being really key to get on the floor for your players. And I'm just curious, so sometimes defense is hard to motivate kids to do, right? Because it's not as flashy, it's not as cool, right? You don't get to put highlight videos of you defensive sliding and guarding guys. So what are some things you do to promote that, to get kids to buy in on defense and under the floor?
You know, rarely do I talk to our kids about on offense. I mean, you know, here's our offense. I mean, it changes every year. I don't run the same stuff every year. It just kind of depends on what we have and what our personnel is. You know, if we've got a good point guard or so forth. But, you know, there are rarely times that I tell kids that they're not running our offense, because I don't like running an offense. I like running sets and they can play out of those things. So they know that the only thing I say about offense is take good open looks. I don't care. If you're open, knock it down. So they know the kind of the rule on that, is take a good shot. And if you're open, shoot it. You're open. Now, if you're a guy that can't shoot it from outside, so be it. Then maybe you move into the paint area, and then when you're open, shoot it. So, but on defense, my energy level is always up high. Cause to be honest with you, it's always about your effort. on defense. There are guys that really can't make baskets that are really great for us because they can defend and they can rebound. And those are things that we, in the drills that we do, I don't, you know, a lot of our assistants do some of the other stuff, but when it comes to our shell drills and, you know, positioning and so forth, my energy level goes up and they can feel it. So in practice, and it's not that I'm mad at them, but my energy level goes up. When we do defensive drills, my energy level goes up, my volume goes up, and they know that we're into this thing, and they can't, you know, some drills, weave drills, whatever drill, shooting drills, they're kind of just going through the motions sometimes. I mean, and that's okay. But when it comes to defense, their intensity is up because mine is up. And when we're defending on the floor, if they have a breakdown, I'm going to let them know because it's not acceptable. I mean, that's only a mental breakdown. It's nothing physical. I've already seen what you can do. So, you know, give me every single play. If you get tired, we'll take you out. And when you get rested, we'll go back in. But you're going to play every single play on defense. So those are kind of the rules that we have. And we barely get guys that want to come out. But if they do, fine. If you're tired, come out. But what you can't do is take a play off.
Right.
So those are kind of things that we talk about, so they know when they do have a defensive breakdown. That's the only time when they're coming to the sideline. It's like, really, you know, that's why did you ask to come out? Because that's not acceptable. And they go, yeah, you're right. So, but those are things that I think as long as you're consistent with that stuff, and it's not one night it's okay, and the other night, and it doesn't matter who we're playing. If we're playing the number one team in the state, or we're playing somebody that's 0-18. The effort is still the same. It doesn't respect your opponent. Play hard every possession. If the game gets out of hand, we'll put in substitutes.
Right. And then their job is to go in and get after it.
And their job is to go in and play as hard as they possibly can. And then those guys, you know, they're great. They've been sitting there the whole night. They come in and they play hard. And it kind of, some teams, you just kind of go, ugh, pull off the dogs.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's hard. We don't play a lot of zone. We'll change it up. But we do change up into a zone every once in a while, but we like to play man-to-man because we want to pressure people, and, you know, that's one good way, you know, pressure without fouling, and that's one good way to do it.
Yeah. You know, you talked about a little bit earlier being, you know, lucky enough to have quite a bit of talent go through Dayton. And you guys have had a lot of success, right? And was successful before you, and you continued that, and you know, winning is hard, but, you know, winning consistently is much harder. So, you know, what do you think are some of the reasons why you've been able to sustain success over the years?
I think there's a number of reasons. There's a lot of commitment from our community with the youth program to get things, you know, kids at a young age, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And that's really when, you know, kids fall in love with the game at a young level. That's what you got to get kids involved. And I think our youth program here, you know, Larry Rignall and Benji Hedgecock do a great job with, you know, getting kids and running a kind of a, it's a small league, but it, you know, gets kids involved. And, you know, that's the start of it. And then I just think that, I mean, before I came here, there were some really great basketball players and athletes, and in the last, you know, 22 years, there's been some really good, I mean, really good athletes. I mean, we had Dante Rosario, you know, played in the NFL tight end. I mean, that was my first year. He was a senior. Mm-hmm. And so you get kids like that. And then before him, just John Hildebrandt, probably one of the best high school basketball players at any level, and still helps with our program. I mean, he takes some of the kids that we have, and he's got a program with Super Handles, and he'll go out and run, you know, if kids want to be dedicated to his program. And of course it costs a little bit. That's the way he makes a living, but they can go out there and be as good as him at dribbling the basketball. And I don't know if, you know, those are things, and other kids coming back and giving back to our programs. But we've had some, you know, a really good run of kids and of, you know, dedicated kids too. They work hard. I mean, that first year with Dante, he was our hardest worker in practice, and he's our best player. That's when you have good teams. When you have a superstar that works the hardest, everybody just follows along. It's like, oh, well, he's the good guy. We've got to do what he's doing. So That's what I tell of all our guys that, you know, that are talented coming through here. Look, you got to be the hardest worker here because they're all looking at you. They don't look at me. They kind of go, well, I got to do what the coach says or I won't get to play. But, you know, they're looking at each other. That's who they should be looking at. And so that line, and that's what I tell them, act accordingly, you know, carry yourself with pride. I mean, make sure you're doing the right things because all these little kids, they're watching you. They are watching you. I mean, you may not think they are, but I mean, they are. So make sure that you're doing the right things and setting a good example for those young guys. Cause that's the only way it keeps, you know, winning is contagious. It can be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like there's something in the water out there in Dayton, Coach. So if I come up and bring some pails of water, maybe that'll help.
I tell you, it's been like that since I've been here. I hope it doesn't dry up because I mean, you know, the people, you know, I'm not a teacher, but I like teaching basketball. My assistant coach is not a teacher, but he loves the game of basketball. You know, and I have a JV coach that played for me, when I was the JV coach, and so we all come from different backgrounds, but we all want the same thing. We all want what's best for this town. You know, we try to do the best we can and get the most out of our kids. But yeah, it's been a good run. I hope it continues. We've had some good ones. I mean, 2011 and 10 and 11 were pretty special years. Just reflecting back on talent, where we got invited to the Les Schwab and got to play, you know, Benson and Jefferson and all those teams. It was really a treat.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll return with more from Coach Hawk right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, as you prepare for the upcoming season, don't forget to renew your OBCA membership. Membership includes access to exclusive resources from high school coaches across the country, as well as access to Lucio Sports Technology, the same technology used by NBA franchises. Membership starts at just $15. Don't delay. Renew your OBCA membership today.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Coach Ron Hopp. Coach, you talked a little bit about practice and shortening it as the season goes along. I'm curious, let's say if you invited me to come watch a practice, walk me through kind of what that would look like. What would I see? What would I feel? What would I hear? Maybe what are some of the drills that you guys would be doing?
Well, I mean, you know, just start by warming up, some passing drills without dribbling, just to get legs stretched out just a little bit, just kind of three-quarter speed. Then we do some stretching. Then we get into just a little bit of shooting, some shooting drills right away to get guys, you know, dribble drive type of stuff where guys are penetrating to the middle and kicking it, and they're rotating on the outside for open jumpers. You know, and then we've got get into our shell drill. So we probably do our shell drill you know, for at least a half hour or 40 minutes. And that's a 4-on-4 drill. They got to get 3 stops in a row or they can't rotate out. So we take, you know, our 12 to 16 guys, depending on how many we have, you know, that are, you know, like size and skill level, split them up evenly. And, they've got to defend under our principles where we're, front in the post and forcing baseline and, you know, backside help, and they got to communicate in that. So that is probably our loudest drill as far as communication. They've got to talk during that thing. And, you know, we practice our pick and rolls, if we're going to hedge them, if we're going to double them, if we're going to switch them. We do have some options off of all that because it just depends on who we're playing. But, you know, they know going in. So those are some other things. And then we'll break up into maybe some small half court stuff. Depends on, you know, what we've got, how many days in between games we have. If it's a, you know, we got one day, or if we've got a day or two, then we'll get up and down the court by scrimmaging a little bit, maybe 15, 20 minutes. And then finish it off by, you know, free throws and some, you know, some running again, just to stay in shape. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I always tell them, look, we're not running at the end of practice to, you know, to punish you. We're running to get into shape because we need to be the best, you know, we need to not be tired in the fourth quarter. So, that, you know, just make sure that you're not thinking that, oh, we missed a few free throws, so we're running more. It's just like, no, these are the rules, and so just run as hard as you can to get into shape. But those are typically how we do things on a normal practice. And then we just kind of do it, like say we didn't do well in our half court setup against the zone. So we might break into some small groups and attack the zone on an odd man front or an even man front. But, mostly that's kind of what our practices look like. And then, you know, if we're not rebounding well, we'll throw in a bunch of rebounding drills.
Right.
Just make sure they're boxing out. That's a big, you know, kids always think it's always the little things that win games, free throws, rebounding, turnovers. Those are the things that win basketball games. It's not the nasty crossover. But, you know, so maybe learn how to box out and, you know, make your free throws and don't turn the ball over.
Simple.
And
game.
We'll be fine.
Simple.
Simple.
I want to ask about talking in practice and in games, right? I think mostly as coaches, we know, you know, watching college basketball, being courtside for an NBA game, you just hear the talk, right? Great players talk,
yeah.
Especially on the defense end of the floor. But I think that's something that high school kids struggle with, right? And, you know, you can get excited and get on the talk. But is there anything that you do in particular to really emphasize that or encourage them to talk that gets them to buy into that communicating on the defensive end?
Yeah, it's a tough one because it depends on what gym you're in too. You know, like, if it's loud, you know, if we're playing, you know, a few years back when we're playing Horizon Christian and or Amity, our local rival, and it's packed and, you know, the gym's fairly loud anyway, you're not going to hear your kids on the floor anyway. But as long as they're communicating to each other, and I you know, I'm not a guy that says they got to be out there screaming at, you know, hey, you know, this and that, but they got to communicate to each other. Did you hear them? Did you hear them? You know, are you guys talking out there? And I'm constantly asking them that, you know, cause I can't always, you know, getting older, can't hear that well, but as long as they're communicating and visually I can see them moving, cause usually it is about communicating cause, you know, our defensive philosophies are to pressure the ball in the perimeter and force it, you know, force it a certain way into our help. And we're front in the post. So, you know, we can defend, you know, we can actually put two on one on the bottom block basically is what we're doing, you know, and pressuring the ball so they don't have an easy entry to a big case, you know, cause if you're guarding, you got a 5 foot or you got a 6 foot one guy and they got a 6 foot eight guy, you play behind them all night long, you're going to get just destroyed. So our philosophy is to play in front of them with the backside help and pressure the basketball. That way, if they do skip it, it's got to stay in the air longer and we can close out then. And, you know, so those are the things and they got to talk on the backside and let your, you know, let your teammate know that you're on the backside because they feel like they're on an island and they don't want a full front all the time, whereas what they should be doing. And they're three quarter in it or half in it, and they end up dumping it to him, and he baby hook, and good away they go. So, you know, as long as they're communicating on the floor and visually, but in practice, you know, we make them do it because the gym's not that loud. So
Right. Those
are the things that you know that we're helping, you know, and so, you know, pick coming, you know, backside help, you know, skip, you know, shot, you know, all that kind of stuff. So as long as they're communicating. In practice, we know that their actions in the games are going to probably reflect what they've been doing in practice.
I'm just curious, I don't know how other coaches do it either, so this is, you know, me asking the question of, do you give them specific things to say, or do you not care what they say as long as they are communicating with their teammate?
Usually, I just want them to know that we're, you know, cause our coverages are pretty, you know, I mean, I don't want them out there go pressure. I think that's just, you know, I don't like doing that. It's just wasting your energy, but I need them to know that we're on the backside of the post players. Cause that's a big one for us. I want them to know pick is coming because, you know, guys can get, you know, if your head's not on a swivel, of course your head should be on a swivel all the time anyway, but you know, guys get run into a pick and you're just like, dude, I didn't even know it was coming. You know, you got to let me know. I'm out here guarding the best player on the team. I'm doing the best I can. You got to let me know when a pick's coming. So, I mean, those are the things that we're, you know, communicating, loose balls, you know, guys coming behind you, you know, wolf, and certain code words when pressure's coming, you know, if you do have the ball and they're coming behind. But, you know, all in all, it's just mostly backside help, skip, shot, you know, and pick. So,
yeah.
Got to keep it simple.
Yeah, right? Absolutely, yeah. Hopefully that helps them communicate then, right? The easier it is, maybe the more they'll do it.
You know, the one thing that I did, you know, I started this about 6, 7, 8 years ago by picking a captain, and I've had about three of them, four of them that probably wouldn't say four sentences to me if they could do it. And, but they're responsible for a lot of things. So making them captain is like, okay, making sure, hey, if we're going to meet somewhere to watch film at a, you know, somewhere, or you need to communicate with the whole team. Or, you know, we're practicing a shoot around on Saturday at this time. You need to communicate with the whole team and you need to be the representative. If there's any problems, you need to bring them to my attention. You know, we've done that thing and it's kind of worked out for a leadership type role too, where kids go, they're not natural born leaders, but we've made them become, you know, we don't care who goes out at halftime for the officials. In fact, half the time they're freshmen. I mean, literally the team goes, I don't care. You guys pick somebody to go talk to the officials. And it's usually freshmen, literally, or sophomores. The seniors never want to do it. They're shooting around. But as far as a team captain, by communicating to the rest of our team what we're doing during the year, what time the bus is leaving, what time this is going on, I got one captain, and he's responsible for it. So it's made some of them. A mom came up to me and said, you know, he really doesn't communicate very well. I go, well, he's going to this year because he's responsible for our whole team.
Right.
And, you know, by the end of the year, though, she goes, you know, it's made him a different person. I go, well, just, you know, make him do it and he'll do it. He's fine.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I like it. What does game prep look like for you? So, you know, whether it's postseason or even, you know, maybe a big league game coming up, how much time do you spend prepping for the other team and what does that look like?
Well, I mean, during our regular season, you know, it's hard to prep. I don't do a lot of prep for the opening game of our, you know, for a lot of our league stuff, especially if it's new coaches, because who knows? I mean, I'll go try and watch and scout and get some film. And with huddle now, you can pretty much see anybody. I really don't like our kids watching game film of other players. Because they always think, oh, that guy sucks. He's terrible. You know, so we do it. We do it and kind of break it down for them. We don't do a lot of that stuff, per se throughout the year until we get later in the season, to be honest with you. I mean, I will go watch some games if I can, and I will definitely watch film on them. And we'll do it that way. But this is what they're running. This is what we need to do. This is who we need to stop. But, you know, there's four other guys on the floor, so we can't, you know. But, I mean, as far as game prep, you know, later in the year becomes more of, you know, okay, this is the sets that they're running, and we'll try to cover as much as we can. But it's so hard to do that for 30 games during the regular season that kids are just, I don't know if they really buy it. They're not college kids. I mean, I remember doing that in college, and it was part of our, you know, give you a pamphlet every game, it seemed like. And it's like, I'm not going to remember all that, but whatever. somebody went through a lot of work, so I'll look at it. But, I mean, high school kids are more of hey, we're down to, you know, win or go home, and it's playoff times, you know, postseason, so forth. This is what we need to do, and this is how we're going to defend them. You know, we do a lot of that at the end of the year. Our league rivals, it's so hard because you play them sometimes four times. So we already know what they're doing. They know what we're doing.
Right.
So, it's especially if you're towards the end, with Amity or Salem Academy or Horizon Christian, all those teams, and, they kind of know what we're doing and we know what they're doing. So there's not a lot of prep going on there.
Right. Makes sense. You talked a little about your youth program and how that's led to some consistent success. I'm curious, how much time do you personally spend with your youth program, and how much time do maybe your high school kids spend with the youth program, and how do you kind of split your time evenly to keep them engaged, but keep your focus on the varsity team.
Right. It is really tough. I mean, I think you can almost spread yourself too thin. So, I mean, we do a camp every year. The kids, our varsity kids have to work it. They don't have a choice. And they generally, it's on a Saturday and it's before, you know, it's later in the year. And you know, it's kind of a, and I tell them, look, it's a way to give back. This is a way to give back to your community. These kids are going to come through our program. They're important to us. And we usually get a lot of kids showing up. They've got to give me a note saying that they're, you know, dying basically to get out of it. But, you know, come and watch and do it. But once again, we have a lot of volunteers. So my participation in that is fairly limited, you know, show up, make an appearance type thing. But it's better just to be, you know, oh, you know, there's the coach, you know, whatever. But we've got so many people that want to volunteer that they're, and I think it's good because you need to have multiple voices in your program and not just one voice. Because it sometimes it's just like, you know, it can be too much for certain kids. They don't want to hear it. And I'll tell my assistants, go down and talk to him because he's not listening to me. But so those are the things. But I mean, there's a lot of people in our community, and I think that's part of the reason for, if you look at programs that are successful, is that there is a high involvement of whether or not it's parents or parents that had kids that went through, they're still willing to give back. Those are the ones that are super important. You know, I mean, you got to keep them around.
Yeah.
Because you cannot do it all by yourself. I've you know, there's just no way. There's just absolutely no way.
Yeah. Takes a village, right? Takes a village.
Yeah. I mean, especially here in Dayton, I mean, we got a lot of people that want to, hey, there's a lot of people in the stands that are experts. So I'm willing to, if you're an expert, grab a whistle.
Yeah. Right.
That's yeah, exactly.
You talked a little bit about, you know, offensively, you change things from year to year and you tend to run a lot of sets. And I know, you know, talking to some different coaches about your teams, they talk about how well your teams execute. Why do you think that is? What do you think the reason is that your teams execute the stuff that you guys run so well?
I don't know. I try not to give them too much. I mean, my philosophy is get up and down the floor and shoot the basketball. I mean, the object is to put the ball in the hoop. So if I had a preference, we wouldn't run anything. We'd rebound it, outlet it, first available shot. We got a couple. I mean, you know, once again, rules. The only rule to have is make sure there's a rebounder when you're shooting. You know, don't pull up into a dribble and leading. You know, it's just like we don't have any rebounds here. I'm not a big fan of that. But we try to keep it, you know, a single pick, rotate it. If they cover that, dump it in. If they skip it across, shoot it. I mean, let's just keep it simple. I mean, I don't like to run a continuity type offense because I never really was a big flex guy, although we do get flexed to death sometimes. And I kind of think, you know, ran a little bit of it in college. I didn't like it. But there are times that you can run some variations off the flex that are good. But I'm more of a let's get downhill. Let's just get downhill. Let's get a good look. And let's shoot it and rebound. If we don't, and you know, so I think we've got about, you know, we try and have about three or four good sets that we run a lot, and these are the options out of it. This is what we can do out of this. I mean, these are let's just count the options out of this. Just one set we're running here, and you usually have about four or five different things that you can do out of it, and so you don't need a ton of plays. You just need to run the ones that you have well. And so, and to be honest with you, if you have good shooters, it doesn't matter what you run.
It's a fair point. Yeah. The good shooter doesn't matter. If he's going to knock it down.
It does not matter. It may, you know, one year I'm a genius and the next year I don't know what I'm doing. So we had a kid named Zach Bernards and he was a really good shooter. So made me look really good.
Yeah, absolutely. You like those kids. You like those kids.
Oh, my goodness sakes. Yeah, that kid. That now that kid is probably the best shooter that's ever played here.
Well,
Okay. I can safely say that, you know, and there's been a long line of really good shooters that have come through our programs, but that kid was, he was special.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about a defense too. You talked a little bit, touched on a little bit, already. But I know you guys, you know, pressure without fouling. I know your teams are traditionally pretty tough and physical without fouling. And you mentioned you kind of rotate differently sometimes on the defensive end. Can you kind of talk about maybe what are some key coaching points that you give to be physical without fouling, and how do you help get kids into the right spot within your rotation?
Well, you know, we break down our shell drill into small, you know, how we want to defend people. It's just like if you're forcing, you know, the old philosophy, force to the middle, that's where your help was, or you know, you're always pushing them this to their weak hand or whatever your philosophy is. It really doesn't matter. I think what kids, you know, when they're playing defense, they go, okay, well, I'm supposed to force the middle. So they open the gate. And our rule is no straight line drives. I mean, so if you've opened the gate, now you've given him a place to drive the ball. And we don't want any of that. So our toughest spot for all of our defenders is right at the point, way out, all by yourself at the point. And I tell guys, look, if you're not capable, you're not quick enough, step back about a step and a half or whatever. If he's really fast, you know, you might give him more. But you still need to pressure him or feel like he's being pressured. So that's probably the toughest spot on our defense, to play is when the ball's at the point and there's five out totally,
mm-hmm.
You know, cause now he's got, you know, so, we always tell them, look, just get on a shoulder, but stay square. So wherever we're forcing the basketball, wherever it is, you know, don't open up, just stay square. But if you're not going to allow them to drive to the middle, be on that inside shoulder. You know, your head should be on his shoulder. That way he feels like, oh, he doesn't want me going that way. So, but still stay square. And that's where a lot of kids, when they close out, one foot is in front of the other foot dramatically, and if an offensive player, which one's he going to attack? Your lead foot. And now you're going to have to open up, and he's going to be by you, and you're going to have to grab him and foul him. So we're always talking about staying square, you know. And to be honest with you, these days, officials allow, at least in our league, in the West Valley, you know, the Pac West now, it's a physical. Salem officials, you know, it's a little bit more physical league than, say, the Coast or, say, Eastern Oregon. You know, so our kids are, you know, I always tell them, look, don't reach and grab early, but play physical. Don't reach and grab because officials are going to, they can see that stuff. But mm-hmm. off ball, you know, bump guys going through the middle, beat them to the spot, chest them up, make sure that you're, you know, doing everything you can. And if they're calling fouls on you, that means you're fouling them. Quit doing it. So, you know, don't complain about the officials. I just get really upset with our kids when they reach. You know, it's like, why? And then they get a foul called on. It's like, you know, we could have saved that for later. You've done two things to our team defensively. Number one, now the officials are going to call everything because you reached. And it's very easy. Now they're going to look for everything. So I tell them in the first quarter, don't use your hands. Use your feet because you got more energy. Use your feet and stay in the right position. Stay square. And then you can ratchet it up. I mean, because now they're not looking for fouls. So, at any rate, just staying square. We always talk about staying square. Don't open up. Don't give them a place to drive.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take another break. When we return, Coach Hoff will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, save the date. The 2021 OACA OBCA Nike Basketball Coach of the Year Clinic will be held Friday, October 8th at Liberty High School. Also, plan to join us for the second annual OBCA Golf Tournament Saturday, October 9th at the OGA Golf Course in Woodburn. You can find more information at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Ron Hopp. He's the boys' basketball coach at Dayton High School. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put you up against the shot clock. I'm going to put 35 seconds on a timer, and I'm going to ask you some rapid-fire questions that should have yes or no answers. Or I should say that. One or two-word answers. Some will be yes, some will be no. Some will be, you know, one or two words. Right. And then we're going to see how many questions you can get through in 35 seconds.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sound reasonable?
I think I got it.
Okay. All righty. 35 seconds on the timer. We are starting now. Do you think Oregon high school basketball should have a shot clock?
Yes.
If you're up 3 points with less than 10 seconds, do you foul?
No.
How big of a lead do you need before you pull off a press?
We don't press.
What's your favorite way to guard on-ball screen?
Hedging.
What's your favorite sports movie?
The Natural.
How do you celebrate after a big win?
Thinking about the next game.
What's one word officials would use to describe you?
Boisterous.
Boisterous. That's a new one, Coach. I have time, but I got to give it up for boisterous. That's well done. I have not heard that one used yet. Oh, that's awesome.
It didn't say intelligent, just said in boisterous, yeah.
Yeah. Coach, you don't celebrate after a game? You not going to the local pizzeria to celebrate? You're on to the next one?
No, I try to keep an even keel because the minute you get to, I mean, now after a state championship game, you should preface it by saying state championship game. We definitely go out to eat and have, yeah.
Yeah,
it's a tough one. I like to celebrate against certain wins, but I like to, you know, I always tell our team, look, it's our main goal is to continue to get better. I mean, that's because when you start going, oh, we need to beat this team, and then it's going to be good. And the minute they beat them and then they have a big letdown, it's just like our whole goal is to continue to improve as the season goes on. That's our goal. And as long as we can kind of keep it simple in those terms, it's like, look, we're just trying to get better every day and, you know, work harder than we did yesterday. And, you know, don't get too high and don't get too low because, you know, there's some times that you get beat and you're just like, last year we got beat by YC by, you know, 20 or something like that at their place. Played awful, deserved to get beat by 20. Turned it over all the time and it was bad. Then they came to our place and we were up by 24 at one point. Of course, they came all the way back, but we still beat them. And then they win the state championship. So you got to, it's just, you know, not getting too high, not getting too low. But yeah, I mean, inside I'm celebrating.
right, exactly. Exactly. That's good. I'll give that to you. You had mentioned you're in favor of the shot clock in high school. Can you elaborate on why?
Well, I think, 2010 was I think it was 2010 or 11. I can't remember. We played Valley Catholic down at Marshfield when it was first down there, and Valley held the ball for the whole first half. Now, granted, they lost their best player, broke his ankle in the playoff play-in game or whatever, you know, and we had him the first round, and we were up. Boy, what was it? It was something like 8-6 with something, and then we got a steal and went up 10-6, and I don't know if it was 10-6 or 12-6 at halftime, something like that. Mm-hmm. And we were guarding them. We went out and guarded them,
right?
You know, and we were chasing them all over the flipping place. And we ended up coming out at halftime, and I looked at my assistant coach and I went, you know what? What if we stall on them? What are they going to do? He goes, that's a good idea. So I don't know if you know Jeff Gallagher. He was the head coach at Valley. So his dad was helping him at the time. And we held the ball for 4 minutes in the corner, just held it there. And I could see him squirming down at the other end. And I never look at the other coaches ever. I never do that. But this one particular time, I looked down there and I saw him and his dad arguing. And so AJ Hedgecock was my point guard. I go, AJ, as soon as they come to guard you, drive to the hole and let's get a bucket because they're not going to really want to play defense. So It was about 2 minutes left in the third quarter. They came out. We went by them, scored a bucket. It was pretty much on. We played kind of a half stall game from the Rams, and I think we won 32-18 or something. But you know, people don't want to go to the state tournament. I mean, we had a 6'10" guy. We had AJ Hedgecock and Hayden Craig, and we had some, you know, some other kids, the Bernards kids, and we had just a slew of guys that people would have loved to have watched play, and they didn't get to watch them that first game. And so, I mean, I don't know with my teams if we need a shot clock, because I'm not a big – this is – we don't run a lot of stuff where, you know, that we're holding the ball for longer than 30 seconds anyway. That's not my style anyway. But I just think that people want to go watch basketball. Now, whether it's a 30-second shot clock, whether it's a 35-second shot clock, whether it's a – you know, whatever it is, I wish there were something. I think 24 is too less time, but I think, you know, somewhere around 30 seconds is probably good.
Yeah.
I think you would get people probably, I mean, they might feel press. I mean, you know, press them to get it, and now you only got 20 seconds to run your set.
Right.
But, you know, I think it would, as coaches, I think it would give you more options, to be honest with you. Say you're a man team. Say that's all you play is man. And you're guarding somebody and it gets late in the shot clock, you do a matchup zone at the very end or something. You know, I think that gives you options defensively that encourage people to shoot the basketball, because that's what people want to see. They want to see you shoot, and they want to see good games. So I'm not in favor of spending a bunch of money to do it. Now, our gymnasium is set up because it's relatively new, but some of these older gyms, how much does it cost? You know, I think that's where it always comes back to, is how much does it cost? And so,
yeah.
But I think if we can raise money to get a huddle, we can raise the money to have a shot clock.
Yeah, for sure. Coach, what's the strangest thing you've seen in a basketball gym, whether it's practice or a game or just something that was kind of off the wall where you're like, what just happened?
Well, that would probably have to be the Amity game at the state tournament. They made 2 3-quarter court shots to beat us in the semis. So, you know, it's not only is it our arch rival and that put them in the championship game. That's the first time they were ever in the championship game. So that was kind of a bittersweet thing. But, a kid, you know, we're up and, a kid hit a, he basically threw up just about we doubled him or he got stuck and turned around and just threw it up at the basket and it went in. They called timeout and we were up. Now we're up 1. And we go down, they foul us. So it's like 6 seconds left. We make 1, miss the second one. They get the rebound, dribble it down. And a kid shoots a runner from like 30 feet going full speed and it swishes. I'm like, not only it didn't bank in, it swished as he's going full speed. I just went, oh, wow, that just happened. So that was the most recent one for me, but I did see one of our teams, 1976, my assistant coach's youngest brother hit a 3-quarter court shot against Tafta, beat him by 1. At the state tournament at Mack Court, so
there you go.
So there's been some good ones.
Yeah, for sure. Goes both ways, I guess.
Yeah, you got to take the good with the bad if you're gonna.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, everybody wants to win, and you know those things. You know, you always remember them when they're against you. It's just kind of like golf. You hit a bad shot, hits a tree, and bounces out of bounds. But the ones that it hits the tree and goes on the green and you make birdie, you don't never remember that one.
No, because that's just good course knowledge. Because that's just being a good golfer. You know what you're doing there.
Yeah, well, not necessarily. Yeah.
Coach, you talked about this a little bit earlier, but team captains. So, you know, every coach kind of does it differently. So how do you select the team captain and what are the responsibilities that you give that captain?
Well, it's usually, you know, it's it's there's not a or sometimes we haven't had to double up on it. Sometimes it's a kid that's probably he's a senior. We usually pick a senior, and it's usually one that's been in our program. Say if I've got two seniors and one started 3 years and one started one, we'll give it to the guy that started 3 years, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I haven't run into a situation where we've had, you know, multiple, you know, guys starting the same amount of time. But it's something that if that happens, we'd have dual captains. But I want to pick a kid that – that's going to be fair to other kids, because sometimes they will have team meetings. It's like, you know what? You guys need to go in and you know, we've had a couple of losses in a row or something. I mean, do we want to change this thing around? I mean, the number one question I ask them is like, how good do you guys want to be? I mean, I ask all every year, do you guys, what, how good do you want to be? Well, you know, if they say, hey, we want to be, you know, some guys, oh, state championship, you know, all this stuff. How good do you want to be? Well, we want to be good. Well, then there's going to take some responsibility then, you know, because it's not always going to be roses. And so if it hits the fan a little bit and they need to have a team meeting, you guys, it's up to you guys. And they'll call a team meeting and go in there and hash some things out about hold guys accountable. And it's not to go in there and pick on people, but it's what can we do to be better, you know. So it's been pretty successful with that. You got to be careful with some of those things that you know, what's going on, what's being said and so forth. But we want to make sure that they're doing the things the right way. So most of them, you know, it has not been a problem. It's been positive feedback from the kids. So, you know, I ask them, how was the meeting? Good meeting, coach. All right, great. Yeah. You know, I didn't see anybody coming out of their tears in their eyes. So I think we're okay.
That's a positive. Yeah. And then, so do you and your coaching staff choose that, or do you let your kids vote, or what does that look like?
No, I just usually pick one. You know, just pick your team captain. No, this year it'll be Tyler Spink. He's been been playing for me since he's a freshman. So he's a senior this year, and it'll be his responsibility. So it's stuff like, so some of these guys want to do a fall league, and I can't be involved in any of that stuff, and I don't want to organize it, don't want to be involved in it, don't want to coach it, don't want to know who's on the team. And I just say, look, you're the senior, get it together. I mean, collect the money and go do your thing. I would prefer that they would just stick with the sport that they're playing, but some of them want to go play a few games on Saturdays, and I don't see any problem with it.
Yeah.
I tell them all well and good as long as it doesn't interfere with soccer or football. So.
Do you have a favorite team bonding activity that you've done or maybe do annually?
Well, usually that's summer. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's what's really been a bummer about this whole COVID thing, because we've had some really good parents too over the last, our parents have been great. We usually go to not necessarily a team camp, but we'll go to like Seaside and play in their tournament, and we get a house. And the parents get a house. And so we have parents coming to the summer league, you know, tournament, and it's Seaside. And, you know, the kids, you know, there's 10 kids in the house and me, and, you know, the parents come over in the morning, cook them breakfast, and then we go play games, and then we'll go out to eat somewhere, or they'll cook dinner again. And it's just been, you know, I think those things that we've missed the last two summers we're missing out, because those mm-hmm. are the things that kids, you know, when they're on the bus go, oh, remember when we went swimming in the bay and so-and-so about froze to death, or, you know, those are things that kids remember for the rest of their lives. Those are the things, you know, that they'll carry with them about our program, you know, how much fun they had on that trip. And I miss them too, because it's, you get to see your kids grow, you know, and play, you know, summer. I don't like to play a lot of summer league games. I mean, I think 15 is enough, you know, if you play 16, whatever, but I don't think you need to go play 30 games in the summer. I really don't. We just need to see how kids, what you need to work on. And usually that's in the weight room, but, you know, but, 15 games is enough. That time away and going to tournaments like that is probably what I miss most of all.
For sure. I think I know the answer to this question, but I usually ask it in this segment, so I'm going to ask you. What's your favorite drill, Coach?
What's my favorite drill?
Your favorite drill.
Well, I would still have to go back to our shell drill. I think I take a lot of pride in the guys that like to play defense. Mm-hmm. So I'd go back to that because there's guys that just once they get to be like juniors and seniors, you can see, and I go, look, we're not calling a lot of fouls in this drill. I go, don't hurt anybody. If somebody leaves the ground, I don't want you undercutting them or anything. But we're not calling a lot of fouls in this thing. So get after it. And you can see some of the older kids that I've had come. I think Travis Bernard's, I mean, I had to tone him back a little bit. I was like, you know, Travis, easy, you know, because mm-hmm. he'd run through a wall to take the ball from somebody. I mean, so,
right.
But you could see those older kids they just kind of get this little gleam. It's like, all right, we're getting after it today. It's like football without with no pads. So,
mm-hmm. No.
You know, I just say keep it, you know, I mean, we're getting after each other today. So let's get after it. You know, we don't want anybody hurt and we haven't gotten to that point, but we've had some guys look at each other cross-eyed a couple of times. It's like, all right, get a drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. I like it.
Good time. For
I like it. Yeah.
Well, Coach, I think that's all I got for you today. Thank you so much for spending the time to talk with us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was really fun. I appreciate you doing this, and hopefully we just keep promoting Oregon basketball and having good basketball here in Oregon.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach Hopp, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you'll join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach him up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.